Welcome to History in 6, a place where we sample history in 6-minute increments. I'm your host, Tim Lindell. Today we're going to finish our discussion of Roger Williams. Time is short. Let's jump into it. In the last episode, we saw Williams had been encouraged by Winthrop to leave before he was sent back to England. Well, Williams and his wife and their children, with their household servants, fled into the forest. Unfortunately for them, it was October, which was the beginning of the harsh New England winter. They spent the winter traveling through the forest and living in makeshift shelters until the spring of 1636, at which point they had reached an Indian village at the head of the Narragansett Bay. Up until his dying day, and Williams lived to be 80, he believed that the only reason they survived that brutal winter was due to divine providence, which means it confirmed in him the righteousness of his viewpoints. He negotiated a land purchase with two Indian tribes and set up a new colony on a site he obviously named Providence. With bitter memories of his prosecution, he let it be known that this new settlement on Rhode Island welcomed dissidents of all kinds fleeing from the religious tyranny of the Bay Colony. His land became a refuge for the antinomians in the New World. Williams may have been an extremist when it came to government, but he was also a man of business. He understood the laws of England, the ways of government, and he knew he needed a title to legitimize his colony. He knew there was a 0% chance the Bay authorities would grant him one, since he was basically booted out of there. So those in the Bay Colony pretty much considered his Providence the sewer of New England. But he also knew that Parliament in London had a new ruling class. King Charles I had been exiled. The Puritans had taken control of the government in England. He believed these ultra-libertarian Puritans in charge would be open to what he had to say. So he set off to England. Once he arrived, he began petitioning Parliament for his charter. On March 24, 1644, Parliament granted his colony a lawful charter. They not only approved of Williams' charter, but endorsed the type of government Williams had drawn up. Since extreme views could be circulated during this period, he took the opportunity to write his defense of religious freedom. He wrote and published The Bloody Tenet of Persecution for the Cause of Conscious Disgust. What a name for a book. In his book, he declared that the government established in the Providence plantations were democratic. The government was held by the voluntary consent of its free inhabitants, i.e., the majority ruled. Williams wrote that the people were free to choose how they worshipped without molestation from neither the government nor the others in the colony. His newly minted colony was by no means popular. Public opinion in Massachusetts was very much against it. They believed Rhode Island was a resort of rogues. I'm reminded of Obi-Wan Kenobi. You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. I'm guessing Han Solo would have felt at home in Rhode Island. But that wasn't his only obstacle for attracting colonists. Williams insisted that any acquired land from the Indians must be paid for with market rates. That made attaining property in the colony considerably more expensive than other locations, which didn't have those stipulations. His Rhode Island colony garnered a reputation of being a place where Indians were honored and protected. On top of that, Williams was accused of having wild and sometimes volatile opinions. The reality was he was an eccentric anti-establishment man. He set the tone for the colony and he attracted the antinomians, but not much else. As late as 1700, the colony only numbered about 7,000 inhabitants, of which 300 were slaves. What's interesting about this, though, is Williams was only governor of his colony for 3 years, 4 years, from 1654 to 1657. But even though he wasn't governor, he was the power behind the scenes. In 1660, Charles II was invited back to govern England. That meant the Puritan ascendancy in England was over, which brought into doubt the legality of the Rhode Island colony. Williams, not one to wait, went back to England, and on July 18, 1663, obtained a charter from the newly minted king, confirming the privileges granted in 1644. This official charter made the principles of religious freedom explicit, which made it an important document in American history. The charter read that no person in the colony shall be molested, punished, disquieted, or called into question for any difference in opinion on matters of religion, as long as they didn't disturb the peace. Rhode Island was the first colony to grant complete freedom of religion and provided the reason for separating church and state, which was wildly different from the other colonies. The other colonies tolerated some differing views while incorporating elements of church into the state. The creation of Rhode Island was a turning point in the evolution of America. The colony was the first to introduce the principles of religious freedom and separation of church and state, a hallmark of the future American country. It also kicked off the practice of religious competition. Rhode Island was a place where religions, well, the Christian variety, could grapple over religious doctrine. They could debate the merits of their beliefs. The religions had to compete for the people of the colony. It was the beginning of the competitive spirit that would flow into every aspect of American existence in the coming years. If you've enjoyed this episode, tell a friend about us. If you haven't already, subscribe to get future content. And as always, have a great day if you want to.